Steve Rose Up, Rick Hautala Remembers His First Time, by Rick Hautala. They say we all remember our first time. Do you? Rick Hautala went to college with Stephen King. Steve Rose Up is Rick's remembrance of the first time he read a Stephen King story. Anything else I could possibly say about the piece would only be superfluous to the essay itself, so I will shut up and allow Rick to recount for you his first time. Before I go, allow me to recommend the work of Mr. Hautala to you. No less than Stephen King himself blurbed Rick's first two novels, Moon Death and Moon Bog. Rick's other novels are Nightstone, Little Brothers, Winter Wake, and Dead Voices. Check him out. I'm going to date myself, but I don't care. Anyone in my age group, that is, anyone who can no longer watch 30-something because of the age cutoff, has a few very sharp memories. We all know exactly where we were when we heard that President Kennedy had been assassinated. I was in detention hall for goofing off in my sophomore French class. We clearly remember when we heard the news that both Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King Jr. had been shot and killed. And, more recently, we have a perhaps too clear memory of where we were when we heard that John Lennon had been murdered. These memories are etched in our minds like harsh, acid, bright lines. But for anyone who has enough of an interest in the work of Stephen King, even to pick up a book titled The Shape Under the Sheet, The Complete Stephen King Encyclopedia, I'll bet there's one more event you can recall with a deep bone shudder. The first time you experienced a story or novel by Stephen King. Okay, maybe the exact time and place aren't there in your mind like the crackling voice of Walter Cronkite struggling to maintain his composure. You might not remember the time or day or the place precisely. Reading a novel or short story, after all, doesn't quite have the bombshell impact of hearing that someone you respected and admired has died. But I'll bet you haven't, and won't ever, forget how, as you first dove into Steve's work, you felt as if your whole sense of reality was being stretched and distorted like a long, sludgy string of taffy being pulled out to and past its limit. Okay, so I've already hinted at my age. I'm just about as old as Stephen King. But there's a bit more to tell. You see, I was a freshman at the University of Maine in Orono in 1966, rooming on the third floor in a men's dormitory called Gannett Hall. Most of the dorms at UMO are co-ed now. Damn, I always miss the fun. Anyway, in the same dorm that same year, I think down on the second floor, was this other freshman. He was kind of strange-looking, and he immediately stood out from the swirling mass of scared-looking freshmen, which I was, and cocky upperclassmen, which I guess I became, as we all crowded into the commons for our daily meals. This guy was different. I saw that much right away. Tall and, at least in my memory, hefty. He had thick black hair and wore eyeglasses that looked as thick as the bottom of a Coke bottle. He was always wearing faded jeans and a casual, frumpy-looking shirt. In warmer weather, I seem to remember that he wore sandals or went barefoot. I have no idea when the beard first came because it, like the leaves on the trees in spring, seems to come and go overnight. Using the parlance of the 60s, he was dressed down, like a hippie, which was the in look at the time. If there were designer jeans back then, they sure as hell hadn't made it north of Boston. One thing I noticed about this guy was that he didn't even seem to be checking out the bevy of co-eds. Being a compulsive reader myself, I also noticed that he was always standing in the lunch line with his face and concentration lost in reading. What was he reading? Nope. Not some textbook or scholarly magazine. He always had a tattered, wild and crazy-looking science fiction paperback. In my memory, it seemed as though every day, 7 days a week, he had a different book at each meal, morning, noon, and night. I remember thinking time and again, my God, that guy reads like a fiend. Little did I know. Somehow or other, I found out this guy's name was Steve King, and that he was majoring in English. Somehow, that fit. Anyone who read that much, I figured, sure as hell wasn't majoring in chemical engineering or forestry. Fade out, fade in. A year later. My sophomore year. I had begun my college career as a biology major with intentions of studying pre-med, so I thought. The problem was, I was a terrible student in biology and especially chemistry. On the chemistry final, I scored a whopping 12 out of a possible 200 points. I got onto the dean's list both semesters of my first year at college, all right, but it was the wrong dean's list. It was a list of students who were this close to being asked to take a little vacation from school. With the specter of Vietnam breathing diesel fumes down my neck, I didn't think that promised me a very bright future. After barely hanging on for one more semester in biology and figuring I'd always enjoyed reading anyway, but certainly not three books a day, I switched my major to English and began reading Shakespeare, Hawthorne, Hemingway, and the rest. Also, for the first time, I became aware that the English majors were publishing a literary journal once every semester. The name seemed to change as often as the editor, but in the spring of 1968, when Bobby Kennedy was unknowingly approaching the receiving end of a Saturday night special, the magazine was called Hubris. A year or so later, the title changed to Onan, and, considering the level of most of the writing, that seemed damned appropriate. I was writing my own stuff at the time, but I didn't have any confidence in my work, so I never submitted anything to the student magazine. I did, however, buy a copy each semester, and I read most of them, too, as bad as most of the fiction and poetry was. "How bad was it?" I hear Ed McMahon ask. "What is any college literary magazine like?" It was full of half-baked character sketches trying to pass muster as short stories and rambling stream of semi-consciousness parading as poetry. I doubt student writing has changed much in the decades since then, but it was reading the first issue of Hubris in the spring of 1968 that I came upon a little story entitled Cain Rose Up. It started on page 33 and ended with a literal bang at the top of page 35. By the time that I finished reading that story, I knew I'd been nailed. I'd just read my first Stephen King story. Now, I've never put a whole lot of faith in my critical abilities, even after earning an M.A. in English, but I knew one thing after I finished reading that story. This most definitely was not your run-of-the-mill student writing. I knew this story and this King fella were somehow different. In retrospect, I even remember wondering if maybe that story had been printed in a different typeface or in a different color ink, because whatever it had going for it, it had the same get-off-the-tracks-the-train's-coming energy Steve brings to everything he writes. I don't think I was the only person back then in the spring of 1968 who started wondering what kind of mind could produce a story like this. But whereas I suspect most of the English department professors and students were freaked out by this piece and objected to its gruesome violence, I remember loving the impact of that story. Everyone knows the story I'm talking about, right? The one where the kid finishes up his finals and then barricades himself in his dorm room, takes his rifle and scope, and methodically starts picking off people on the mall between the dorms? And maybe, without even looking it up, you remember that the woman's dorm across the way was called Carlton Memorial. If you don't remember, I'm sure there's a reference to it somewhere here in The Shape. But you're wrong on this one. And if Steve Spignesi tells you it's Carlton Hall, then he's wrong too. I don't know what name Steve had in mind for the dorm from which the character Kurt began firing, but I also know its real name. It's Gannett Hall. I knew, from the way Steve described the scene outside Kurt's dorm window, that, sometime during his freshman year, maybe many times, he'd been sitting by the window of his dorm room in Gannett Hall, one floor below my own room, and looking out across the mall to Androscoggin Hall. And at some moment during our freshman year, that wild imagination of his kicked into high gear. In a world where Texas Tower snipers and Lee Harvey Oswalds can shift the scales of reality in an instant that will make the evening news, Steve King, the sophomore English major, brought it all home to the University of Maine in Orono. I love the story Cain Rose Up because, for the first time in my life, I truly experienced the magic of fiction making. Oh, sure, I'd read plenty of science fiction, fantasy, and horror stories, and I've loved a lot of them, Bradbury, Howard, Vonnegut, Burroughs, and Lovecraft in particular. But none of their stories ever hit me with the impact Steve's stories had, simply because, just a year before, I had been struggling to stay in college just like Kurt so I wouldn't end up in Vietnam, where everyone seemed to be doing what Kurt had done. What Steve did, the magic he wove, was to take the intense pressure to stay in school that I and probably all but a handful of college freshmen feel, and make the horror of it live. Sure, he's done that lots of times since in dozens of novels, stories, and movies. Reading Salem's Lot a few years later, honest to God, made me sleep with the light on for a week or two. But I'm sure, no matter how many times it's happened since, every avid King reader vividly remembers the first time Steve did it to him. I feel privileged to have discovered this man's work long before the rest of the world did, and I'm sure as hell glad he's still doing it to us. Rick Hautala's 5 Favorite Stephen King Works. The Dead Zone. Salem's Lot. The Body. Cujo. Misery.